For journalist Barbara Ehrenreich's best-selling book, Nickel and Dimed, she went undercover, so to speak, and got a number of low-paying jobs. She worked as a server in a chain restaurant, a cleaning person, and a Walmart associate to see firsthand the difficulties of living on the wages these jobs paid. For her latest book, Bait and Switch, Ehrenreich went undercover again to understand what white-collar workers are up against after they've been downsized out of a job. And she looked at the industry that sells people in the job market makeovers, resume assistance, and employment counseling. What were the rules that you laid out for yourself for this book in looking for a job?
Okay, I wanted to get a white-collar corporate job. I faked a resume, but there was nothing in it that I couldn't actually do. I presented myself as a PR person, which is, you know, goes along with being a writer, a journalist. And so that was me. That was my persona. And my rules were that I had to do everything possible to get a job.
One of the jobs that you declined was at an insurance company. What was the job like? Why was it something you didn't even think about accepting?
Well, first I had to say I was kind of thrilled because it was the first legitimate bit of interest that popped into my inbox, you know, in, what, 9 months or something. And they said, we're really excited about your resume. We think you'll, you know, fit well in our company. And it was a sales job. And I wrote back and said, I'm not interested in sales. But however, I can manage your sales force. And they said, oh, come on over. Well, all it was in fact, sales. And you're basically, you're on your own. All you have, you're given is the right to go out and sell their product. And then you make some money off, you know, as many of these policies as you can sell. No benefits, no salary, no office even to work out of. So, but, you know, that kind of so-called job where you're really on your own making commissions, is increasing thing that people turn to, especially those people who've been ejected from the corporate world, people who have been white-collar, who have, organizational skills and so forth. It's very insecure, very scary.
And the other job you were offered was similar, except it's selling cosmetics instead of selling insurance.
Yes. Now, this is what you would have to say, knowing me, objectively was not a good fit. But I was looking a little more, you know, I really transformed myself for this job search. I had makeup, you know, and so I caught the eye of a woman who was trying to recruit people. Again, you only make whatever money you can from selling the product. And in both of these cases, this kind of, annoying or scary thing is you've got to put up some money to get into it. For the cosmetics job, my calculation, I think, was I would have needed $1,900 for my initial inventory. And for the insurance job, I would have had to put out about that much for the various, you know, to get licensed and to do all these things to even get my foot in the door. So you have to make this upfront investment, and then you don't know if you're going to make any money.
Now, you're a professional writer and have been for many years. What did you learn about resume writing by actually going to a professional?
Well, my resume was fake, but I got the sense that everybody's is a little bit fake. You know, surprise. I said, I'm a little worried about my age, that I'm, that I don't want that working against me. And the coach just said, well, how would anybody know your age? And I said, well, because obviously I have all this experience and it tells when I graduated from college. She said, oh, no way. You don't tell when you graduated from college. And you got to hack off, remove any experience that comes from 10 or 15 years ago max. So you've already condensed yourself into this seemingly younger person. And another strange thing about the resume writing, one coach, you know, advised me to, after looking at the results of my personality test, which I must say was pretty good, she thought I was had a wonderful personality. She said I could now claim to have all these qualities in my resume, like takes charge easily of situations. She said, that's one of my personality traits. And I said, well, so, you know. She said, so put it in your resume. I said, no, you can't do that. You know, that's just based on your test. So I thought all of that was kind of, you know, borderline dishonest.
When your process was over and you realized, you know, your time was up and you weren't getting a job, you ended up contacting some of the job seekers that you'd met at the beginning of the process to see how did they do, what kind of jobs, if any, did they find? What are some of the things that you learned about the job seekers that you met?
Well, so this is people who've been looking for many months and or over a year in some cases. And, you know, it's a pretty grim trajectory. The first thing people always talk about doing is cutting back expenses. You know, obvious things, no more cable TV, no more movies and things like that. Then they may downsize their living quarters. And then they may auction off possessions on eBay. If there was a non-working spouse in the picture, he or she gets whatever job he or she can get. And, you know, what happens if it's a single person, they often talk about going back to live with their parents. If it's a family or even a lot of single people, they take a so-called survival job. And that's what white-collar people call them. And these are just the ordinary jobs that blue-collar people have. One woman was cleaning toilets. And this was a marketing person in information technology. One man talked about working at Circuit City. Another man was driving an airport limo. And they like to think that these jobs will be short-term. The trouble is, you know, the longer you're unemployed in the white-collar sense, the less likely you ever are to get a job. Because you can't put that in your resume, right? How do you explain the last year if you have been stocking inventory at Walmart?
Now, in order to find a job, you changed your name. I mean, Barbara Ehrenreich is a pretty well-known name right now. Nickel and Dime has been such a successful book. So you changed your name from Ehrenreich, which is the name of your first husband, to Alexander, which is your maiden name. You got a new Social Security card for your name as Barbara Alexander. Is that a change you ever would have made in your name had it not been for the book?
No, I don't think so. I thought about it when John Ehrenreich and I were divorced. But, you know, my kids had the name of Ehrenreich, and so I, you know, wanted to stay with it. I tell you, Alexander's a lot easier to spell.
So do you use it now? I mean, you actually changed it legally, so how much how much of your identity is now as Barbara Alexander, and how often do you actually use that name?
No, I still use Ehrenreich.
So does that mean...
But this was undercover, Terry. Mm-hmm. This was really undercover. When you change your name, I don't think I was totally undercover in Nickel and Dime because I was using my own name. And here I was definitely, certainly did not want to be identified. Because so, I'm sure some employer would have, might have read some of the things I've written and decided I had a bad attitude.
Barbara Ehrenreich, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Terry.
Barbara Ehrenreich's latest book is called Bait and Switch, The Futile Pursuit of the American Dream. Coming up, Lloyd Schwartz reviews a new DVD collection of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers musicals. This is Fresh Air.